importance and possible relevance of biblical predictions for our own age at the end of the sixth millennium, approximately AD 2000 or somewhere between 1789, the French Revolution, and approximately 2200 AD, we would like to look at the relevance of Daniel chapters 8 through 12. Now, in Daniel chapter 8, the same prophetic date of approximately AD 2000 again seems to become apparent. Here, in yet another vision, Daniel looked out of the palace in Shushan by the Ulai River in the Babylonian province of Elam. This was in the third year of the reign of Belshazzar, around 540 B.C. Looking out over the countryside, Daniel saw a big goat suddenly hurtle across the face of the earth from the west and destroy a ram in the east that was pushing westward and northward and southward. The two-horned ram in the east was identified with the twin Medo-Persian Empire. For the Median Empire had become absorbed into the Persian Empire as the twin Medo-Persian Empire in about 549 B.C. And that Medo-Persian ram was still expanding westward and northward and southward, for it would soon absorb the remnants of the previous Babylonian Empire as from 538 B.C. onward. Now, the conquering goat from the west was identified with the as-then still-future Grecian Empire, which, of course, lasted from 336 through 64 B.C. By implication, however, the goat, or rather one of its horns, also represented the still more western and still more future Roman Empire too, for the Roman Empire would begin to expand even from the time of the Samnite and Latin Wars onward, beginning in 338 B.C. Almost simultaneously, in fact, with the rise of the Grecian Empire. Just before 301 B.C., the Grecian Empire broke up into four parts, the northern and the western, and the eastern Seleucidic and the southern Ptolemaic parts. And from the west, the Roman Empire would later absorb the Macedonian Greek Empire into itself, almost simultaneously with the successful Israelitic revolt of the Maccabees against Antiochus Epiphanes and his Greek Seleucids. The Maccabeans appealed for Roman aid against the Greeks in 167 B.C., compare Daniel 11, verses 30 and 31, thus John Calvin and many others. And the rest of the Greek Empire would finally be amalgamated into the Roman Empire just after 64 B.C. Daniel then prophesied that the Grecian goat with the one and only notable horn would destroy the two-horned Medo-Persian ram at the Battle of Issus in 333 B.C. Thereafter, continued Daniel, the Grecian goat would wax very great, for Macedonian Greece would then expand with lightning rapidity westward into what is now Yugoslavia, northward into what is now the Ukraine, eastward into what is now Persia and India and Soviet Central Asia, and southward deep into Egypt. Indeed, this Grecian expansion would continue until the notable horn, or the kingdom of Alexander the Great, would break off of the head of the goat at Alexander's sudden death in 323 B.C. This broken-off notable horn would soon be replaced, however, by four other notable, though lesser Hellenistic horns, which would then grow out of the head of the Grecian goat. This occurred when the Grecian Empire was divided up among Alexander's generals into the eastern kingdom of Seleucus, the southern kingdom of Ptolemy, the northern kingdom of Antigone's Cyclops, and the western kingdom of Lysimachus and Cassander, prior to the Battle of Ipsus in 301 B.C. Towards the four winds of heaven, we are told. At a later stage, apparently not out of one of the four Hellenistic horns, but rather out of the west wind, as one of the four winds of heaven, there came forth a little horn which waxed exceeding great, and which ultimately uprooted and replaced all four of the Hellenistic horns. Now this exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8, which later came forth out of the west wind, and which replaced three less notable Grecian horns, is extremely reminiscent of Daniel chapter 7's already described arrogant and stout Roman horn. It is not at all reminiscent of the tiny tinpot tyrant of Syria, Antiochus Epiphanes. But this notable horn, and exceedingly great horn, rather, of Daniel 8, is exceedingly strong in resemblance to the Roman stout and arrogant horn of Daniel chapter 7. It became very strong and stout. As a matter of fact, the pagan Roman exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8, as I identify him, is historically the direct predecessor of the papal horn, the stout horn of Daniel chapter 7. The westernmost post-Alexandrian Grecian kingdom was absorbed into the ever-expanding and still more westward west wind Roman Empire in 168 B.C., during Rome's constant expansion toward the south and the east, and its absorption of the western Macedonian Grecian kingdom and the southern Ptolemaic Grecian kingdom. All of this from that time onward. Moreover, with its absorption of the eastern Seleucidic Grecian kingdom, Rome also expanded into the Near East from about 64 B.C. onward, too. The Roman expansion from small beginnings was indeed that of the growth from the west of a little horn which was exceeding great toward the south, Egypt, toward the east, Sinai, and toward the pleasant land, Canaan. In fact, Rome had already absorbed the whole of the previous Grecian Empire, north and south and west of Arabia, more than half a century before the birth of Jesus Christ. Daniel chapter 8's little horn, which waxed exceeding great, is the same pagan Roman Empire of Daniel chapter 7, the fourth empire, which later developed into the papal Roman Empire, or the little horn which came up and which ultimately grew more stout than his fellows or the surrounding other political horns or kingdoms. Daniel chapter 8's little horn, which waxed exceeding great, does not seem to have been the Antiochus Epiphanes prophesied elsewhere in Daniel chapter 11. Instead, Daniel chapter 8's exceeding great horn was the Roman Empire, which thrust against its hostage Antiochus Epiphanes, and which later conquered his territory. Unlike Rome, Antiochus Epiphanes was not a kingdom, but only one of a whole line of leaders of the Seleucids. Unlike Rome, Antiochus did not wax exceeding great in comparison to Alexander the Great of Greece, or in comparison to the Roman Caesars. For Antiochus was not in his power, and was not even the most powerful of the Seleucid leaders. Unlike Rome, Antiochus did not grow great through conquest of the Egyptian south. Again, unlike Rome, Antiochus did not stand against Jesus Christ, the Prince of the Host and the Prince of Princes. Unlike Rome, Antiochus did not abolish the temple sacrifices, but only temporarily took away daily offerings. Unlike Rome, Antiochus only desecrated or desolated the place of the sanctuary, but did not cast it down. Unlike Rome, Antiochus did not really prosper. Unlike Rome, Antiochus suppressed the Jewish sacrifices for exactly 3 literal years, and not for 2,300 morning evenings, however interpreted, or 2,300 years. Unlike Rome, Antiochus did not reign in the latter time of the Hellenistic kingdoms after Alexander, but only in the middle of that time. And unlike that of the Roman emperors, Antiochus Epiphanes' rule was hardly mighty, nor of fierce countenance, as is required of the fulfillment of the exceeding great horn in the language of Daniel chapter 8. Consequently, although the Seleucidic Antiochus Epiphanes, indeed mentioned in Daniel chapter 11, is sometimes also wrongly regarded as the exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8, if not occasionally as the arrogant stout horn of Daniel chapter 7 too, it has been demonstrated, we believe, that the description of the exceeding great horn in Daniel chapter 8, and especially the description of the arrogant stout horn in Daniel chapter 7, can rightly be applied to Rome alone. It was mighty Rome that held Antiochus hostage and easily checked him in 165 BC before ultimately absorbing the remnants of his eastern Seleucidic kingdom and Palestine in about 64 BC. Daniel chapter 8's succeeding great horn was identified as the Roman Empire by Luther, Melanchthon, Bullinger, Downham, Broughton, Roger Williams, Parker, Isaac Newton, Thomas Newton, Samuel Hopkins, Thomas Scott, Adam Clark, Daniel Wilson, and many others. It was identified as the Antichrist by Irenaeus, Origen, Pseudo-Joachim, and Thomas Aquinas. It was regarded as specifically Roman by the 350 AD Aphrahat, and by Thomas Horne, and by the Dorlian Mant Bible and the Cottage Bible, and by Jenks' Comprehensive Commentary. And it was considered to be the Roman papacy by Luther, Melanchthon, Bullinger, Downham, Brightman, Roger Williams, Parker, Isaac Newton, John William Fletcher, the Berlinburg Bible, Thomas Newton, Samuel Hopkins, Thomas Scott, the Christian Observer, Adam Clark, S.D. Maitland, William Cunningham, W.C. Davis, Joseph Wolfe, Edward Irving, Daniel Wilson, T.H.R. Burks, and the Seventh-day Adventist theologians, Uriah Smith and Leroy Edwin Froome, etc. Not Antiochus Epiphanes, then, but Rome is the exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8. Indeed, the heathen Roman horn even started its prior expansion from the time of the Samnite and Latin wars, as from 338 BC onward, almost exactly contemporaneously with the rise of Alexander's own Grecian Empire during the very same decade. Thereafter, Rome fought the prolonged Punic Wars in Africa against the Carthaginians as from BC 261. Rome conquered Sicily in 241 and Corsica and Sardinia in 231 BC. As from the beginning of the 2nd century BC, Rome expanded far more rapidly She conquered Spain in 197, Armenia in 189, Macedonia in 168, Corinth and Carthage in 146, Western Asia Minor in 137, Southern France in 121, Cilicia in 102 BC. During the 1st century BC, Rome conquered Cyrenaica in 96, Bithynia in 74, Crete in 68, Syria in 64, Palestine in 63, Northern France in 58, Numidia in 46, Egypt in 30, the Balkans in 29, and Galatia in 25 BC. Then, in the 1st century AD, Rome invaded Germany in the year 12, conquered Cappadocia in 17, England in 43, and Mauritania in 44 AD. In 64 AD, the pagan Roman exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8 started persecuting Christians and, 6 years later, destroyed the city of Jerusalem under Titus's army. It later developed into the arrogant papal Roman horn of Daniel chapters 7 and 8, which, as the Roman Vatican, also persecuted Christian Protestants. Now this pagan to papal and Roman to Romish exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8 would persecute the saints of God, just as would its direct successor, the papal Romish arrogant and stout horn of Daniel chapter 7. Indeed, the pagan to papal, Roman to Romish exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8 would persecute the saints for 2,300 evening mornings or days. This means, on the day-year principle of predictive interpretation, that the true people of God would be persecuted for fully 2,300 years. For such is the clear insight of famous expositors such as the 950 AD Nahawendi, Martin Luther, Cotton Mather, the Newtons, Samuel Hopkins, Adam Clark, Albert Barnes, and many others. At the end of this period of 2,300 years, the sanctuary would be cleansed or made right. This means that the sacrosanct Church of Jesus Christ would be cleansed by the fall of the papacy as the continuation of the Roman to Romish, pagan to papal, exceeding great horn. That, in its turn, would soon be followed by the arrival of a time of great blessing for the sanctuary of the Church of Jehovah Jesus. For such a time of future blessing has been competently and confidently expected by recognized expositors of Daniel chapter 8, such as Pierre-Jean d'Olivi, Ubertino of Casali, Cotton Mather, William Burnett, Thomas Newton, Richard Clark, John Gill, James Winthrop, Joseph Priestley, John Bacon, the Connecticut Evangelical Magazine, Thomas Horn, George Stanley Faber, Charles Rollin, Thomas Scott, the Cottage Bible, and many others. It was already pointed out that the persecution of the saints by the papal, Romish, arrogant, and stout horn of Daniel chapter 7 would last for fully 1260 years and would only gradually subside. So too, even the persecution of the saints by the papacy's direct predecessor, the pagan to papal, Roman to Romish exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8, would only gradually subside. At first, the persecuting power would be only a little horn, for only gradually would it grow into an exceeding great horn, which would ultimately even reach up to heaven and attempt to cast the very stars onto the ground and stamp on them, to cast down and desolate and tread down the sanctuary, to persecute the holy people, to destroy wonderfully, and by peace to destroy many. The Roman robbers of God's people, thus Daniel 11, started their destruction of the eastern Mediterranean when they first moved against Ptolemaic Egypt, as from 200 BC. Then the Romans checked their Seleucidic hostage, Antiochus Epiphanes, by sending their ships of Chittim to Palestine in 168 BC. After this, the pagan Roman emperors, or their imperial governors, subjected Palestine from BC 64 onward. They crucified the Lord Jesus Christ around 33 AD, and under Emperor Nero, they started to harass Christians in 64 AD, right before destroying Jerusalem and its temple sanctuary in 70 AD. Thereafter, Rome repeatedly persecuted Christians for many centuries, especially before Constantine. But even after Constantine, Rome continued to persecute Christians under tyrants like Emperor Julian the Apostate and the cruel Emperor Phocas. Thereafter, this anti-Christian Roman persecution of God's true church was continued by the blasphemies of the Romish popes from early medieval times onward. The Vatican has persecuted Protestants during and since the time of the Reformation, and it continues to do so, even, though diminishingly so, until this present day. For the spirit of anti-Christian persecution lives on today, not only in the communist Khrushchev's Christmas Day 1960 statement concerning his intention to chase God from the heavens. The same wicked spirit is also found even in the ongoing persecution of Protestants by the Romish papacy and her agents in many Romanistic countries, and especially in South America, even today. Accordingly, as in respect of the arrogant and stout horn of Daniel chapter 7, there are probably also various prophetic termini a quo and termini ad quem, even in respect of the 2,300 years persecuting reign of this exceeding great horn of Daniel chapter 8. Rejecting the extremely strained Seventh-day Adventist terminus a quo of 457 BC, it can be seen that the Roman-Romish exceeding great horn could have started to reign, in terms of this prophecy, as from his imperial birth during the Roman, Samnite, and Latin wars commencing in 338 BC, so that his 2,300 years reign in Daniel 8 would then last through 1992 AD, or the year in which the Second Vatican Council liberalized traditionalistic Romanism and promoted ecumenism with the Eastern Orthodox and with liberal Protestant groups in an attempt to bring them back under the Romish papal umbrella. Or the Roman-Romish horn may have started to reign in terms of this prophecy from the death of Alexander the Great in 323 BC, for 2,300 years till 1997 AD. Or the Roman-Romish horn may have started to reign in terms of this prophecy from the year 301 to 300 BC, when the four Hellenistic generals settled down to rule their various provinces for 2,300 years through 2000 AD. Thus, by the way, John Gill and the 1803 Connecticut Evangelical magazine. Or the Roman-Romish horn may have started to reign, in terms of this prophecy, from the latter time of their kingdom of all four Hellenistic provinces, or from about BC 200 onward, for 2,300 years through 2100 AD. Again, the Roman-Romish exceeding great horn of Daniel 8 may have started to reign, in terms of this prophecy, after the Roman destruction of the Hellenistic province of Macedon, and after the Israelites' appeal for Roman aid against the sanctuary-desecrating Greek Seleucid Antiochus Epiphanes in 168 B.C. For 2,300 years through 2132 A.D., thus the A.D. 1290 Pierre d'Olivi and the A.D. 1305 Ubertino of Casale. Or the Roman Romish horn may have started to reign, in terms of this prophecy, from the time of the fall of the pleasant land of Palestine to Pompey's armies in 63 B.C. for 2,300 years through 2207 A.D. Or the Roman Romish horn may perhaps only have started to reign, in terms of this prophecy, from the A.D. 70 Roman destruction of the Jerusalem temple for 2,300 years through 2370 A.D. Now, of all of the above various dating possibilities, looking at the total context of Daniel 8, the B.C. 338 through 1962 A.D. time frame, and especially the B.C. 168 through 2132 A.D. time frame, or the A.D. 70 through the A.D. 2370 time frame, best seems to fit the particulars of Daniel chapter 8. However, from any of the above perspectives, the general time of 1962 through 2370 A.D., the time around the approximate end of the 6th and the beginning of the 7th millennium in the history of the world, marks the gradual termination of the power of the Roman, Romish, pagan to papal exceeding great horn of Daniel 8, and the gradual termination of the persecution of the true saints of God. This then seems to be the approximate time of the terminal activity of the long-enduring Roman, Romish, and pagan to papal exceeding great horn. During the last phase of that terminal activity, the Roman, Romish, pagan to papal horn may even absorb socialism and communism. But at the end of the 2300 years, when the anti-Christian horn shall also stand up against the Prince of Princes, Jesus Christ, he shall be broken without hand or shattered even without human agency. Of course, this shattering already took place in principle at the time of Christ's resurrection. Further shatterings took place from time to time in subsequent history, and notably at the time of the Protestant Reformation. Yet there is also an indication of another shattering, a future and a final one, scheduled to take place between A.D. 1962 and A.D. 2370, to take place approximately at the end of the world's 6th millennium. This approximately 2000 A.D. shattering will mark the end of Antichrist, thus Charles Rollin and Thomas Scott. It will mark the restoration of God's unchallenged rule over all the earth, thus Thomas Newton, Joseph Priestley, Thomas Horne, and the Cottage Bible. And after that, our already reigning Prince of Princes, Jesus Christ, shall still continue to reign in considerably greater measure than ever before, and even forever and ever. So then, out of one of the four winds of heaven, there came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great toward the south, and toward the east, and toward the pleasant land. It waxed great even to the host of heaven. And it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground, and stamped upon them. Yes, it magnified itself even to the prince of the host, and by it the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary, the prince's, was cast down. And a host was given to it, together with the daily sacrifice, in ungodliness. Compare both the Roman destruction of the Jerusalem temple as well as the desecration of the Christian church by the later Romish papal mass. And it cast down the truth to the ground. Compare the Romish papal rejection of Protestant Bible truth. And it practiced and prospered. Compare the economic stability and successes of the Romish papal church. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, How long shall division endure concerning the daily sacrifice and terrible ungodliness or the transgression of desolation? How long shall both the sanctuary and the host continue to be trodden underfoot? And he said to me, Unto 2,300 days, or for 2,300 years. Then shall the sanctuary be cleansed or set right. Compare the ongoing Protestant Reformation and its future success throughout the church universal. Now the above prophecy, Daniel was told, would start to unfold probably only after Alexander the Great's Grecian Empire had been succeeded by the Hellenistic four kingdoms out of the Grecian nation, but not in Alexander's power. Only in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a Roman king of full countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. Compare the cruelties and superstitious claims of the Romish popes. And his power shall be mighty, and he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper and practice, and shall destroy the mighty and holy people. Compare the Romish papal persecution of true Protestant Christians. And through his policy also, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. Compare the Romish Jesuitical ethics. And he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. Compare the Romish papal Pax Vobiscum. He shall also stand up against the Prince of Princes. Compare the blasphemous pretensions of the Romish papacy. But he, the horn, shall be broken without hand. And the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told, is true. The angel Gabriel told Daniel. Therefore, shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days, namely for fully 2,300 years. And then, or at some time between 1962 and 2370 A.D., the Romish papacy shall be broken, and Christ's church shall be cleansed. For the saints of the Most High shall gain the victory over the Romish papal horn, and they shall take away his dominion to consume and to destroy it unto the end. And the dominion and the greatness of the kingdom under the whole heaven shall be given to the people of the Most High, whose kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions shall serve and obey him. The next prophecy, contained in Daniel chapter 9, was revealed in the first year of Darius in 538 B.C. Whatever its exact terminus are quo, it clearly establishes the day-year principle of predictive interpretation, as we saw in the first lecture of this series, by accurately foretelling the very time of the then-future baptism and death of Jesus the Messiah. But it also predicts the desecration and destruction of Jerusalem in AD 70 by the Romans, and possibly also the even later destruction of the Roman Empire itself in all of its various later forms. Daniel chapter 10, revealed in the third year of Cyrus in 534 B.C., reviews the struggle between Persia and Greece in some detail. Then Daniel chapter 11, apparently revealed at the same time, predicts the history of God's true people from the time of Alexander the Great of Greece. It foretells the outcome of Israel's struggles, similarly to Daniel chapter 8. For in even greater detail, It describes the actions of some of the kings of some of the four post-Alexandrian Hellenistic kingdoms, as well as the arrival, in the days of the Seleucidic Antiochus Epiphanes, of the Roman ships of Chittim, thus the Alexandrine Septuagint, Daniel, the Vulgate, Jerome, Calvin, and many others. Thereafter, the chapter also deals with the subsequent Roman invasion and occupation of the glorious land of Palestine as from the first century onward. And finally, Daniel 11 predicts that ultimately the Roman power too shall come to his end and none shall help him. Much of what Daniel chapter 11 writes about ancient imperial Rome, as previously in the case of Daniel chapter 8, also lives on in papal Rome too. For the Romish papacy too is self-willed and given to magnify itself above every god. The Romish papacy too, enslaved to the sin of compulsory celibacy, had little regard for the desire of women. And the Romish papacy too is given over to Vaticanistic idolatry with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. In Daniel chapter 12, this was apparently also revealed at the same time as was Daniel chapter 11, namely in the third year of Cyrus in 534 BC. Here, all of the above is focused on our present Christian era. It is brought to bear on the entire New Testament period, starting with the incarnation and the resurrection of Michael Christ, thus Calvin, the Geneva Bible, the Dutch States Bible, Matthew Poole, and Matthew Henry. The benefits of Michael Christ's incarnation and resurrection are permanent and irreversible. Consequently, this new or New Testament period endures even till the fulfillment of the most ultimate aspects of as yet still future eschatology. During this new period, many that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Many shall be turned to righteousness. Many shall run to and fro and increase in the knowledge of the Lord. It shall be many years to the end of these wonders, namely a time, times and a half. Many shall be scattered to preach the gospel, and many shall be purified. Here again, much of Daniel chapter 12 is not only applicable to imperial Rome, but also to its papal Roman successor. For Christ also defends his true church in the time of trouble caused by papal Rome. For the Romish papacy too scattered the power of the holy people, or the true proto-Protestants and their successors, down through the centuries. And the Romish papacy too, in the place of the daily sacrifice of the Older Testament, has set up the abomination of the Mass for at least the last 1260 years. Here, the 3.5 times, or 3.5 years of prophetic day years, means 1260 years, thus Adam Clark and Albert Barnes, which is an indefinitely long time, thus Calvin. For God's true Christian people, this is a long time and a longer time and a short time, signifying that their troubles should have an end, thus the Geneva Bible. These times apparently did not start to elapse until at least the first century AD, when God's true Hebrew Christian people were scattered from Jerusalem and out into all the world to propagate the gospel everywhere. These 1260 years would be fulfilled, and they would then perhaps also be elongated to 1290 years, or even to a further 1335 years. But after the Romish papal horn shall finally have been destroyed, the patiently waiting saints of the Lord shall truly be blessed, for they shall enjoy the blessing of taking over the kingdom of this world for their Lord, and thereafter they will unimpededly reign here upon the earth forever. And with that, in the next lecture, we shall go to the New Testament, to the Johannine and the Pauline, Antichrist and the Man of Sin.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. You are welcome to make copies and give them to those in need. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. It is likely that the sermon or book that you just listened to is also available on cassette or video, or as a printed book or booklet. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's Edmonton, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."